Och hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Catch Yourself On podcast. I am your host, Rosie, and this week we are looking at climate resilience in agriculture, and more specifically, regenerative agriculture. Agricultural and land practices is quite a divisive issue, especially in Northern Ireland. So we're going to be stepping into meaningful, nuanced conversation around this in this episode. In a lot of environmental conferences, agriculture can sometimes be left out of the conversation. And this is particularly the case in Northern Ireland, a country which is steeped in a history and tradition of agriculture and farming. Farmers can most certainly be part of the solution to the climate crisis. And no one believes this more than Stephanie McAvoy, who I am interviewing in this week's episode of the Catch Yourself On podcast. Stephanie is one of the two founders and brains behind Farming Carbon, a social enterprise making environmental and social impact through sustainable farming. Through Farming Carbon, Stephanie and her business partner really want organisations and businesses across Northern Ireland to become more socially responsible and to start having an environmental impact. Some of the issues that Farming Carbon really dives into are biodiversity, healthy soils, and farming powered by renewables. In this conversation, we cover all those things and more. And I really enjoyed talking to Stephanie because she is just a lot of fun, as well as a really intelligent, resourceful, and creative businesswoman. So without further ado, I really hope that you enjoy this conversation on the Catch Yourself On podcast with Farming Carbon. Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for coming on to join me on the Catch Yourself On podcast. It's a delight to be speaking to you. And I know that you're like a font of all knowledge when it comes to regenerative farming, but regenerative agriculture is a term that some people will not be familiar with. So to begin, I thought you could maybe give a bit of context to what regenerative agriculture is and your own journey into regenerative agriculture.
Yes, so regenerative agriculture is essentially just looking at how we can improve or increase efficiency within agriculture. Conversation around environmentalism often is simplified down to cows are bad, farmers are and a lot of farmers like really take that personally, like, you know, so they feel like, so I think that within the environmental conversation, sometimes agriculture is definitely scapegoated by other, like, it's pointed, their flaws are pointed out by other companies that are perhaps doing things that aren't fixable. But within agriculture, there's a lot of scope to actually increase biodiversity. Whenever plants grow, they go through photosynthesis, so that's essentially a scientific process of ingesting the carbon from carbon dioxide and releasing the oxygen as a byproduct. So every time a plant breathes and grows, it's storing carbon within itself. And that can create food for livestock as well. So I think there's a lot more potential in the agriculture industry than we're having a conversation about, and quite often we're just blaming it all on methane and cow burps, but it's a lot more complex than that.
And then how did you get into this in the first place?
I got into this, so I am from a farming background. Like, my uncles all farm beef, one of my best friends is a dairy farm, and they're like our neighbours. I live in the countryside, so they actually live like 10 minutes away, but we call them neighbours. I spent my 20s working away on super yachts and just like basically as a witness to the gross overconsumption that is kind of highlighted or celebrated in our society. And it really just made me very reflective. So whenever I left the boats to do something else, I really wanted it to be something that was massive and environmentally impactful, almost to try to offset my own conscience for having worked in that industry for 5 years, but also just because I think that we're kind of on the cusp of being able to save what we have. But if we don't act now, like the grief that I would have for losing like biodiversity, especially at home, like the little unique butterflies and birds that we only have in Ireland. And as I traveled the world and saw that there's a lot more hustle and bustle in our hedgerows than there are perhaps in other parts even of Europe, so I do think that we have a lot to protect. So it kind of made sense for me to come home and tried to just explore what I was doing. And I got involved with Farming Carbon specifically because my brother is a wind turbine technician or wind turbine worker. He works for a gentleman who has been exploring regenerative agriculture for the last 5 years. And in conversation with him in this summer, basically taking his knowledge and his experience over the last 5 years and trying to knowledge share and really just help other people learn, because we don't really have time for everyone to take 5 years to learn. Do you know what I mean? So if we can make what we find out relatable to other people, that would be good.
Yeah, because he's got like that built up knowledge and expertise and years of research, which then you can take forward. Maybe you could tell me a bit about the framework that you're using at Farming Carbon.
Yes, perfect. So we have essentially a 7-stage framework. I tried to make it sound good. So we've got groundwork, growth work, gross work, grosser work, chemicals, and farming practices. And all 6 of these balanced would lead to total ecosystem balance. So the groundwork is the soil. The growth work is all of the plants that we plant. First gross work is all of the bugs that we have. So all of the worms, the bacteria within the soil, and essentially a healthy microbiome. And then the grosser work is livestock health, and also the use of livestock poo as fertilizer, which takes us onto chemicals. So reducing chemical usage through repurposing our livestock poo, or purchasing poo off other places, because it is gross and it stinks, obviously, but like it's so much better than fertilizer, which goes through a process of mining and then factory production and then international shipping and logistics. So you don't, like, depending on where you're buying your fertilizer from, like that could have a big carbon footprint. If you just use poo from the farm up the road, we're saving out that carbon journey. And then farm practices. So our farm is completely run on renewables. So there's loads of ways to decrease the carbon footprint of a farm. There's ways that you can adjust tractor tires so that they use less energy. You can use a GPS tracker on any machinery so that it uses less diesel. You can use machinery that's more modern or hire machinery per the day rather than owning something and then it's sitting in the shed, because that's like a waste of resources. So there's lots of things within farm practices that could be improved, but none of them need to be completely overhauled. It's just like step-by-step improvements for each of these 6 categories. And then with that, that would start to have a positive impact on the air quality, on water pollution, on soil erosion. Then it starts to have these like more national things, and that would be at the point where we're starting to protect our national food security. If we were to employ these practices across the land, then the soil itself would be more robust, it would be more porous, and it would be able to absorb flood water. When during periods of flood or increased rainfall, the water would actually go right down into the soil and it would sit within the root systems. And it means that during periods of drought, then the plants, all they have to do is migrate their roots a little bit further into the soil itself. And then they would survive through periods of drought. If we go through, say, 5 years of increased flooding and increased droughts, what that would do would actually just degrade the soil to the point that it wouldn't be able to repair itself. We're not necessarily driving that everything has to be organic, because organic means chemical free. And for land that has been used to having chemicals over the last few years, they actually become dependent on it. So you have to wean it off it again. So our overall view for Farming Carbon would actually be that we could make massive impact in the farming community, really support the rural community through the changes that they need to make, and ultimately increase the land under sustainable practices. So increase the amount of land that we have in Northern Ireland that is growing multi-species because of the growth. Oh, should I have explained this first maybe? But the growth that we have in our fields is multi-species. So there's the kale, typhon, rape and turnip. But when people drive past that, like, it's commentable, like remarkable, like you would you were like, wow, that field is particularly green and very tall.
That's really interesting. I feel like that highlights like the specificity of things, because it's the idea that like you really have to look at each individual farm and like the history of the agricultural practices as well. It's really interesting. Like you wouldn't think about that, because you talk about like the turnip and the kale and stuff. And I know that one of the facets of that is like increasing and restoring biodiversity. And I think a lot of people have this vision of Northern Ireland as like, or the island of Ireland even, as like the Emerald Isle, whereas actually like we're ranking the 12th worst when it comes to conservation and things like that. Which is like really, really devastating, because having followed like you and the work of Ballyconnelly Farm as well on Instagram, like I have seen how regenerative agriculture focuses on like restoring soils and the degradation of soils in the island of Ireland, which is super interesting and something which isn't like super sexy or super glamorous, but really important, as you say. And that link with food insecurity as well. And I've seen that quite a bit, people talking about how regenerative agriculture is really a big, big solution when it comes to food insecurity.
regenerative practices and reducing the amount of chemicals that you're using, hopefully to net zero chemicals, it decreases the yield. So quite often people would say, oh, well, we have, you know, 8 billion people to feed, so we can't be doing that. And you're like, if everyone could value food a little bit more, we actually still have plenty to go around. The problem is that during the process of farming, there's quite a lot of food that actually gets rejected from the farmer. That goes to the food manufacturer, say, or the logistics, the supermarkets. Like, how much food gets rejected from the supermarket shelf, you know, like, as in the consumer doesn't buy it. And then how much food do we buy and take home and chuck it in the bin? But if we properly valued the food system itself, we would be less likely to be wasteful, and we'd be more resourceful with what we have. Maybe chopping things up and putting it in the freezer instead of letting your onions and peppers go bad. But we don't have to, because food's so affordable.
How far then would you say, Stephanie, that your business model challenges this idea of quote-unquote business as usual?
I don't know how much we challenge business as usual. I think what we're trying to do is work with business as usual, and everyone make small steps, you know, a little side step on this and a little side step on that. And actually, if you made 15 small changes a day, then that would actually be enough. You know what I mean? So we're not saying that you have to not shop at a supermarket anymore and you only shop at the farmer's market. But at the same time, if you decided to not purchase your meat from frozen specialty supermarket and you instead decided to go to your butcher and buy less meat, you know, so you're still spending the same amount of money on meat, but the meat that you're buying is actually coming from a local farm, or things like that. Like, I think it would be more small trade-offs that actually are rewarding themselves. We're not trying to directly challenge people. We're trying to show how effective this is, how much it's a win-win for everybody, and try to get them on board on that front, rather than being like, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. Because especially with the farming community, like, I can see how that is actually so toxic, and it makes them want to just dig their heels in. And bear in mind, I'm not speaking on behalf of every person in the farming community. I'm speaking on behalf of close family who I've had the conversation with. And I can understand why they're just like, bloody environmentalists, they're doing my head in. And you're like, are they really doing your head in?
Yeah, what sort of examples then can you draw on in terms of success stories, like with your own farm? You talked about like the kale and the turnip and like that restoration of biodiversity, but how you've implemented that through small changes.
So there is a thing that you can do when you're planting crops. You can plant a bean or a pulse with them, but there's one example where there is barley planted, and so on one side of the hedge, there's a hedge running through the middle, two fields on either side. On one side it's beans and barley, and on the other side it's just barley. The beans are there, they're called a nitrate fixer, and they essentially help balance the excessive fertilizer that was used in this space. Both fields are in the same area, they have the same soil type, they're growing the same crop. But the other day there was a flash flood, is a bit dramatic, but there was a sudden downfall of rain in the outer Downpatrick area. And with the two fields sitting side by side, the one that has a multi-species that has just a little bit more diversity, there was no water sitting on that field. And at the same gradient, like on the other side, you could see there was just puddles sitting there, which would have evaporated in the sunshine afterwards. The plants aren't actually getting that water.
Yeah, no, because you talk a lot about like increasing species diversity within a crop. And I think that's really interesting, because in some ways that goes against the grain. mixed woodland areas as well, and designating particular areas to conservation. But because to me, this all sounds very like viable and obviously very important. But if you had someone sitting here who was opposed or was resistant, maybe they would say those practices aren't of agricultural value, and then maybe talk about like economic value and economic opportunity. How do you think that your solutions are like economically viable for farmers?
The thing is, like, the areas for conservation, like one example of an area for conservation that we had a conversation about recently was a field that was not particularly productive, and the farmer had wondered why. And so an agronomist had come in and had put a swath of wildflowers along the side of it. This wasn't a permanent solution. This was not a wildflower meadow. This was within the farming season. So I think it was maybe for 6 months they had the wildflowers. But one of the flowers that they planted were sunflowers. And so the sunflowers were miles above the rest, and there were radish and clover and stuff in that too. the impact of that was that come September, October time, those sunflowers were starting to drop their seed. Not only did they have an increase of the insects and really helping out the microbiome of the entire field, but the birds that came down to feed on these sunflower seeds as well. Like, there's like an area of conservation doesn't have to be a woodland. It doesn't have to be, right, that's it, that part of your farm's never productive again. Mm-hmm. It can be just this like relief, like just give it a holiday. And within doing that, you're creating habitats for the bugs and everything. And it's more about the balance of the microbiome. And really, that's why it all comes down to the soil. Like, if we can increase the health of the soil, you increase the bacteria. And essentially then the smallest insects have something to feed on. And then something has, you know, the next biggest insects can feed on the really tiny ones that we can't even see. But a lot of what we do, it's not that it's a specific conservation area. Like, our thing at the minute, which I am obsessed with taking photos of, is the fact that we're feeding a herd of cattle on this multi-species mix, which is the turnip, rape, typhon and kale. And whenever I walk into the field and I'm 5'6", that comes up to about my shoulder height. Like, it's a really dense area of just green growth that you can't walk through because you're tripping over turnips. And then whenever you go down there in the evening time, because it's on a hill and the way the sun sets and that, you can actually see, like, there's so much life and movement. Like, one, you can hear the din of wings fluttering and all the little noises that bugs make. I know some people will be like, oh, cringe, please stop talking about bugs in such detail. But, like, I love to see it. And then, you can literally hear that, like, this mini forest is alive. But then when the cattle get in, so that it's paddock fed, so it's just they only get, like, 2 metres at a time for the length of the field. They're going mad for the kale. It's so tasty. The typhon has antibacterial properties, so economically reducing how much vet bills we have to pay, but also it's much better for their health because they're not taking like chemical supplements or antibiotics. They're getting this through their diet. The field that we have this on is a very steep gradient. It wouldn't be great for arable crops anyway. That's saving an entire winter's full of feeding a herd of cattle and their vet bills and their energy bills, because there's a shed out in the field and their diet is so hardy and healthy that they don't need to be inside and sheltered all the time. It's reducing the electricity bills because you're not powering the sheds. It's reducing your carbon footprint because you're not using machinery. Normally on a farm, obviously, you would break your back if you were trying to carry the volume of food that a herd of cattle would eat in a day. So they have like little mini diggers and things like that. You're not using any of that machinery. What you would have to invest in fertilizer to keep your soil productive. When you take time off and let your soil kind of recoup, you're increasing the diversity of it all rather than killing off the bad bits and the good bits. And it's a way in which we can mimic nature in a controlled way. Like, we want them to eat it, so we will put it right in front of them. Then whenever the cows get in and they're eating a bit, you'll see that like the birds start to sit around the fence poles. Like, they know they're not going to compete with a herd of cattle, but they are also just waiting out their second so they can swoop in, because we're not using insecticide and things on this crop. The insects that are growing in our mini shoulder height forest are diverse, and that, like, honestly, everything from crows, jackdaws. I think we were talking the other day about yellow hammertails, and I am not a bird expert. I actually really hope that more birdie people can get involved, because you can see they're all different and they're all really cool. But no, honestly, once the cows eat through that, all these birds go mad for. So we were actually hoping to also have sheep go in afterwards, because even the diversity of droppings diversifies the bacteria, and everything that can help increase the diversity of the microbiome is a good thing. But the cows actually love the food so much that we don't have any left for the sheep, so the sheep are gonna stay on the grass.
It's a really beautiful image, especially that one at sunset. It's like a really beautiful vision of nature coming together and stuff.
There's a thing called reciprocity within plant growth. It's in Drawdown by Paul Hawken, actually, this concept of reciprocity within plants, and the amount that you can increase the health or the quality of the microbiome through increasing the diversity of plants. It is really remarkable. Like, it's a really interesting concept if you're into that kind of thing. Economically, this makes heaps of sense. Like, this makes a lot of sense. The bean barley or the pea barley thing that we were saying, when that's cut, that is a cattle feed. And that saves you purchasing your cattle feed in from another supplier, and it can stay in the shed until you're ready to use it. A lot of these things, like, so they're planted with nature in mind. It's a form of biomimicry. So it's trying to emulate what nature does in a controlled way to our advantage, essentially. And it's really taken modern efficiencies, because there's no point in being like, oh, just go back to the way we always did things, because we have modern efficiency, we have the science and the tech and the knowledge. And I know that there are companies here in Ireland that are doing really interesting things in terms of how we're doing things and how we can improve things. And I think Devonish is a company that's doing that really well with their omega-3 feed. As much as it's really good for biodiversity and it's really good for sowing quality and it's really good for carbon drawdown, this is economically better for everyone. Mm-hmm. And the only problem, the only cog in this system that's not working, is the fact that at the end of the day, through these practices, we might not produce as much food. So we would have to, as a consumer, and the supermarkets and food manufacturers would have to look at the process of waste. And at the end of the day, actually, there are companies here in Ireland who are innovating and providing the technology for food-based companies to question their waste and look at this. So I do think that even within that space, we're all trying to walk in the same way, and we're not trying to convince anybody. Like, this really works. We are collecting evidence to demonstrate how much it really works, and we would love for everyone to get on board. But I think that we're constantly telling everybody else, you should be doing that, and you should be doing this, and you, and like, and the thing is, like, if someone came to me with something that I did every day and was like, I know better than you, so don't do it like that, like, okay, we want people to turn to us and be like, sounds like you're doing something right over there, do you know, like, rather than going in being like the barky dog, as well being a young woman who's not a farmer, could tell you now 100% there will not be anyone who'd be like, yes, please tell me your thoughts on how I should run my business that I've had for 30 years.
But I think that's, I really respect that, because I think it's the same for individuals as well. We don't win hearts and minds by criticizing other people's lifestyle choices or telling people what they could do better, but by leading by example and with grace, and just dutifully keeping on with the small changes that you're making in your life. And then hopefully that makes people pay attention. At least that's how I was inspired by people around me who were making these lifestyle changes. And it does make you turn your head.
Like, no one's intentionally doing the worst they possibly can. You know, like, everyone is trying. And it's a massive misconception to think that farmers aren't already, like, one, obsessed with the health of their land, because they are. Like, the closest to the land, they have so much more knowledge than our current media cycle is giving them credit for. Mm-hmm. And the amount that we're pushing value out of our food systems is genuinely costing people their livelihoods. It is the reason why the average age of a farmer in Northern Ireland is 59. It is not a viable career choice. Many family farms, they do not encourage their children to just go into the farm. And if anything, they say, you go have a career and come back, and then you can take over the farm and you'll do this part time on the side while you also have a full time job. We really need to start to question attribution of value within that system. Like, it's just not fair. And the thing is, if we continue to devalue farms to the point that there's so many farms on the market in terms of sales, will mean that we are going to be at risk of these industrial or big corporations coming in and being like, here, did you see the price of land in Northern Ireland? So cheap. Come on, we'll go in there and we'll buy it up and we'll do this. And then rather than having a healthy, thriving rural economy, which we did have for many years, we're going to have Kellogg's owned massive super farm. And then, like, not to say that Kellogg's are even interested in that, but, you know, like, it's that kind of, if we need to start to shine back that society actually does care about farming, society does care about biodiversity, that all of these things can go hand in hand, and that our company, so Farm and Carbon, it's £5 a month, that's 17p per day, and the money, it's going back into the rural economy to show this network of farmers that they are appreciated, that people do value their food, that people want to help them make changes to be more green or be more environmentally friendly. It's so attainable, it is so reachable right now. But if we get to the point where there's so little money left in farming that all of the farmers have deserted it, we've lost an entire knowledge base. We leave ourselves open to huge corporations coming in. So it's not even just all of the benefits of what we're doing now, it's the genuine fear of what could happen if we don't do it now or don't succeed with what we're doing now.
John Barry from Queens talks about farmers as being stewards of the land, and John Gilliland from Devonish talks about farmers being custodians of our carbon. And I think those two like identities are so important because it reminds us that farmers do know the land better than anyone else, and they should be involved in forging these nature-based solutions and regenerative agriculture, and how we should really see the role of farmers as an active one, even though people are kind of disempowering them in some ways. And it's a shame that we can't enter into meaningful dialogue about the future of agriculture in Northern Ireland and how that is changing.
I would love if we just started being like, yes, the farmers, like, woo, it's the farmers' fair. Like, I feel like historically in Ireland, and I've been reading a lot into like Irish folklore and stuff, I feel like we really are such culturally so tied to the land. Yeah. And yet, like the Californication, again, modern criticism of modern age, like we're all like wanna be American, or we all wanna be something else, we want to be Essex, or we want. I think the role that agriculture plays in Northern Ireland is massive. We have incredible land.
Do you think governments are too slow to offer farmers subsidies to encourage them to implement regenerative agriculture practices? Because I guess in some ways, well, you talked to me previously about like the sharing of machinery and how this doesn't have to be more expensive than commercial farming, but some people would argue that it requires like initial investment in the research side or an infrastructure, and how maybe it takes more time, like reduced profit margins and increased costs because the soil needs time to improve. So how do you think the government could be supporting farmers, whether that be through public goods or redirecting funding?
I had an interesting conversation about subsidies. And so farmers are subsidized. So that is how much our social systems undervalue food. The farmers are being paid out the difference because the consumers aren't being charged it. Do you know what I mean? So it's, if you looked at subsidies on a larger scale, the government is subsidizing cheap food. They're not really subsidizing the farmers. But I do think that subsidies are almost held over their heads, like, do what I tell you or you don't get paid. And in any other career, or if you or I were doing work and someone was like, do this or say this, or do you know, it does feel a little bit like controlled. And I suppose that in terms of public funding, it's a macroeconomic system here, and I am not really in a position to comment on it professionally. I suppose legislation tends to be led by people who are not maybe farming themselves, who maybe don't fully relate to it, so it doesn't always seem to kind of carry through. In terms of helping people through this process, we're so far behind that. Like Northern Ireland doesn't actually even have environmental legislation, so to think that the Department of Agriculture would have their own specific legislation or framework or assistance to get through this kind of green transition does seem too far to stretch. A lot of times innovation can be facilitated through the private sector. Like you can empower businesses to, again, make slight steps, do small things, provide funding to companies who can, or align themselves with companies who can. Because I really don't know how. It's so easy for us. We're a small, lean, agile company who are doing it ourselves. So we're very well positioned to say, collaborate, share our knowledge at not much cost, but to try to create a system out of that. Of course, there would be a huge cost involved. Unless you had the right people doing it, I don't know if it would even be cost that kind of comes back. I really don't know.
No, but there's a few things that come out of what you say. One is like incorporating farmers in the decision-making process, and the other thing is that idea of like knowledge sharing and partnership and meaningful alliances, because I think that's a really beautiful part of Irish culture and Irish history, and the idea of like passing through knowledge in an intergenerational way as well.
Honestly, that is so it. Like, so my granddad was a farmer, and essentially what you would want to get back to is like the granddad's, their method of farming, because they used to do like 1 acre at a time, and they would change the crops often, and their soil was really healthy, and any food they had was so precious that it was very highly valued. But then it's like, but we're not our grandfathers. We live in the modern age. We have modern technology. We have the glory of the internet. We can be over informed on pretty much everything. So we can look up best practice, acknowledging the knowledge of the generations before you.
Yeah, and building upon that. Mm. And finally, just a clue, Stephanie, the name of this podcast is Catch Yourself On. And what is one thing that you think communities in Northern Ireland could catch themselves on about in terms of regenerative agriculture or farming practices?
What I really think people need to catch themselves on about is food waste. Because in order to fully value our agriculture systems, we need to stop throwing food in the bin. So catch yourself on.
If that message really resonated with you, and if you want to join a community that is committed to regenerative agriculture and farming innovation, be sure to check out the link in the episode description that will take you to the Farming Carbon Instagram page and website, where you can learn more about what the organisation does, the ethos and the vision behind it, as well as different like book recommendations and free resources. Thank you so much to Stephanie for communicating on that topic in a way that was so engaging. A topic that some people don't really know so much about, myself included, learnt a lot. So I think it was really good to have that insight and that perspective. And hopefully it's only the beginning of more meaningful conversations and dialogues on the role that agriculture can play in helping to address the climate crisis. That is it for this week's episode of the Catch Yourself On podcast. Thank you so, so much for listening. I want to thank Joe and James for composing the music to the podcast. And if you've just discovered this podcast in the new year, then be sure to subscribe so you don't miss out on other interesting conversations. You can also follow me on Instagram to be more up to date with local climate action that's happening here in Northern Ireland. But I hope that everyone has a beautiful week, and I look forward to speaking into your ears again soon. Until next time, bye!